Hello, Podnutians, and welcome to the Mini PC Show, episode 54. I am Door-to-Door Geek. This week, I am joined by Richard Hughes. How's everything going, man?
Everything is fantastic in the Hughes Compound Southern Command.
Well, hell, that's fantastic is good. I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, I like it.
Well, you had me going. I'll ask you first, is there any new hardware or epiphanies in mini computers for you this week?
You know, no new hardware, no real epiphanies, but the big thing in my mind recently is the good and the bad about mini computers is, you know, I've made this comparison a couple of times on the show, is they're kind of like virtual machines in that it's commodity hardware. You can just pull out a micro SD card, drop another micro SD card in, and do something completely different with it. And when you're done doing that for however many hours you want to do that for, you can pull that micro SD card out and put the original micro SD card in and have it do, you know, whether it's, you know, SNMP monitoring or home automation type stuff, and you're back to where it is. I really need to keep a whiteboard next to my data center in a drawer so I know what the heck was running on what.
Yeah, I have a little credit card sized micro SD holder, and I would write like 3 or 4 letters with a fine tip felt pen next to it, but it wasn't erasable. So I kept thinking, well, I can probably 3D print this thing. And no, it doesn't look like I can. So I'm going to have to find an alternate solution where I can categorize my SD cards. Because I like the idea of having a pre-done Raspbian image ready to roll, a pre-DiaPi image ready to roll for all different kinds of hardware. And I don't have that. And I really should.
So what I started doing is, this is not an example of it, but you always get the SD card holder with the micro SD card, that plastic case. I took blue tape, which you now have a lot of, I think, and just wrote what was on it, and I have that in my box of microcontroller stuff.
Right. Yeah, I saw more than a couple micro SD card holding solutions looking for 3D printed stuff, and to me, they all just horribly sucked and were ridiculously big and bulky for what they did. I do have a couple of them laying around, but I don't have enough. I don't have enough. Can I ask, how has your Pinebook experience been for the week?
I'm using it less and less. And thanks for bringing that up, because I don't know. Did you have RAM options? Because I'm not sure what I got. I don't know if it has a gig of RAM or 2 gigs of RAM or what.
I don't remember an option. I believe it was just 2 from the get-go, and that was it. And that was all you could get.
So I am running Android 6.2 on it, and I believe it's 6.2. It might be 6.1. I don't know.
Is it behind me? No.
It's in my bedroom right now, I guess. So the Pinebook was supposed to be the substitute for my MacBook Pro that I would watch YouTube, Plex, and Amazon, and what else? Netflix. Those types of videos. Maybe read emails on. I found I've installed more and more things on it, you know, so doing everything through an APK. So last thing I installed on it was like Google Plus, so I can do Google Plus stuff. You said 2 gigs of RAM. At least with the Android OS running Chrome as a browser, it seems that it takes a long time for pages to load. Do you have that experience? You're running Ubuntu, right?
Chrome on Android is always bad. It's always laggy. It's always a little bit slow. It's just the way it is with me with Chrome on any Android device. 2 gigs of RAM to me is the borderline for Android experience. It's hard to get a really good experience. If you have, and I didn't look at this, when you're running the Android, do you have the option to pick recent apps? Usually it's either a square button down by the home button.
Yeah.
If you have that, sometimes there's a trash can button. What I'd ask you to do is hit that, delete all the apps. It's supposed to do a memory flush, then load Chrome. Mm-hmm. I've seen dramatic improvements, but the improvements only last for a minute or two, and then it goes right back to being slow.
Should I use the stock browser with that?
I say you should try to. Because you can get faster, but then in my experience, you get so less features, it's almost not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
My experience is, it depends on the web page. It depends on the page that I am loading. If I load something big and heavy, hangouts.google.com with literally megs of JavaScript being downloaded, it takes sometimes literally a minute to a minute and a half on tethered Wi-Fi for it to load. When I'm home, it still takes over 30 seconds for it to load. It isn't extremely fast. On certain sites, it seems almost snappy, but a lot of the websites that are popular, I go there and they are not snappy. They are definitely a little bit slow. And I use Google Plus in the web browser because in my experience, when I run it on Android with a native app or through a web browser, I can't tell the difference in speed. To me, the only advantage to having the app is you get notifications. I'm okay with not getting notifications because I instinctively ADD type open it so many times a day, I don't need notifications. But it is slow. It is not quick. I mainly use it for correspondence back and forth, IRC using Quazzle and Mattermost in the web browser. And when I do media, I'll say this, when I do media in the browser, it isn't bad. It isn't fantastic, but it actually, I get good frame rate. I don't see dropped, like screens or anything, dropped frames. It seems like it's okay, but app wise, it is not quick. It is $100. So I still feel like bang for the buck, I got a quality product. And the keyboard I still think is unbelievably usable.
Yeah, I definitely, $100 for that, I'd still be giggling. Like if I was at a flea market or, something, a computer show, which they don't exist anymore, and was able to get it for $100, I'd walk away giggling. Definitely. Don't regret it. And I haven't tried the Android OS 7. There isn't, last I checked, an SD install for it. I'm micro SD card, that is. And you can boot it off of the SD, but not install it to the internal storage. So the thing I haven't been able to fix and haven't spent a whole lot of time looking at it is I just reboot it because it boots reasonably fast enough. Is after it sleeps, you have no audio. And a large part of what I want it for is audio. So for you, how long has the battery lasted?
Well, I'll say it's unfair how I test it. It's because I don't use it for a straight number of hours. I at work, open it up, turn on the Wi-Fi. I always turn the Wi-Fi off before closing it. It's just a habit I do at work. I don't want my device constantly pinging stuff. So I turn off the Wi-Fi, open back it up. I'd say a third of the day I have it open and it's still above 50% every day. So I'm getting, I believe, 7, if not more hours out of it. And I will say I have an SD card formatted with Android. I don't believe it's 7. I believe it's 6. 7 is supposed to be more hardware friendly. I don't believe it, but it's supposed to be more hardware friendly. So you might see a better experience. I will say my experience from booting to disk, from booting to SD, I don't notice a speed difference. I'm shocked. Oh, yeah. I'm generally and genuinely shocked at how well it performs off of SD card booting. Not that it's super snappy, but that it isn't unbelievably slow.
I'm definitely going to give 7 a spin, and I don't know if I'll be able to do it till tomorrow late or when that's going to happen because I got some stuff scheduled. So where are you? Where are your feelings on this?
I like it. I'm still going to use it a lot. It's light enough to carry around. I really like the power option because I have the USB cord. Yeah. My only gripes are really now stupid gripes. Like, why not in the default Mate desktop, don't they have the brightness indicator automatically added to the desktop? It's not properly configured because it will let you turn the brightness down to 0 to where the screen is literally black and you can't see anything.
Right.
Typically they have a minimum maximum like 20 and 100 or something like that. That's my only gripe. Everything else seems to run fine. In other window managers, when I try to load i3, which is one of those archaic old school looking ones, I can't get the battery to report correctly. So I have no idea what my battery percentage is, how long I have left when I'm in those managers. So I keep booting into Mate just so I'm aware of how much battery I have left. I still like it. I still like it a lot. I wish I could do more on it, but I know I can't. I can't edit podcasts on them. I can do web editing. I've loaded podnuts.com up before, and I've went into the WordPress backend, and I'm able to work on the website. Okay.
Oh, cool.
You know, so overall, I'm very satisfied with it. And I did drop it. I didn't tell you guys that. I was holding it vertically, not horizontally, mm-hmm. and I dropped it, and it landed right on the corner. And it dropped a good 2.5-3 feet at least.
Onto what kind of surface?
Well, I have hardwood floors where I dropped it.
Okay.
But I have this unnatural instinct of when I drop anything to throw my foot underneath it to try to cushion right. the blow.
Yep.
That thing landed right on my pinky toe. And I swore I broke it for 3 or 4 days. It was
serious?
Killing me. It was killing me for like 3-4 days.
Wait, the pine book's got to be the lightest thing out there. It's lighter than my MSI Wind.
Well, I know, but there can't be much sturdiness in your pinky toe. I mean, I don't know. All I know is it hurt, and I literally thought, what if the screen broke and I only got to use this thing for a week? I'd feel really stupid. But I, you know, it seems fine. Seems fine. So overall, I still like it for doing especially quick things, and it's part of the boot speed is why I like it. When mm-hmm. I just need to do something quick, I just pop it open, hold the power button for 2 seconds, and within seemingly 10 seconds, it's up and it's ready to be logged in. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think maybe, you know, maybe after we wrap the show up, I'll see if I throw Android 7 on, I'm not going to have all of my apps. I got to install them onto the card.
Yeah, you have to re-download them again. See, here would be a good use case. Well, no, see, because you have the APKs. So one thing you can do is you can install an app, side app, of course, called App Wear Rabbit, W-E-R-E, Wear Rabbit, and you can basically, in one click, APK backup all of your installed apps and then just copy them from one folder to your SD card.
Wow. That's a big deal.
Yeah. It won't work for the more hardcore paid apps, and it won't work for the default system apps. I'm pretty sure it's just the apps that you install that are free and are lightly DRM'd.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
cool.
I have other mini PC stuff, but it's very disappointing. I finally pulled the Raspberry Pi 3 out of the Pi top because I haven't used it for 4 or 5 months. I loaded,
and I'm not trying to twist the knife in you. How much was the Pi top? And that's just like a case, right?
$290, I believe.
So $300, you get something with a keyboard, a screen, and a battery.
Well, with a very bad keyboard, a very small touchpad on the side, very unusual configuration, a inverter board, and a power board, and a battery. And a screen. And the screen seems to be the standard screen in all of these devices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very disappointed in my return on investment, if you will.
And the way I look at the Pinebook is, if this is their first crack at this, I can't wait for the second one. I can't wait, because they have a 4 gig board right now.
Right.
Like, two things. One, you've said this before. I think if they get the drivers right, get a couple of things tuned right on this, this will be a winner.
Well,
I think it.
What I hate to say is, they don't appear to have the passion to do an OS right. Mm-hmm. If I was them, what I would do is I would literally.
They should do a bounty.
Well, a bounty, or go to a distribution and say, "Would you like to be our official Pinebook distribution?" Mm-hmm. And then have them work on the drivers, the default desktop, the apps that are installed, stuff like that, to try to optimize that desktop. Because it would be a better experience, there's no doubt. I'm almost the opposite, though, Richard. Me, I'm thinking, this is not that fancy of a device, because I had to crack it open and replace the MMC. So I saw the internals. This mm-hmm. isn't that fancy of a device. Why can't I 3D print my own stuff, use my own board, rip the ports off of it, hopefully not burn down my house, try to solder the ports on the side, you know, and make my own, essentially? Because all I would really need is the screen.
So you're talking about, like, dropping an Odroid XU4 in there or something like that?
So, I don't want to say anything else, but something else, yes. And it's nothing more than a pipe dream. I'll say it, nothing more than a pipe dream, but at least it has me thinking. But and then I'm going to tell you, if they come out with a version with 4 gigs of RAM and this, I will probably heavily entertain the idea of buying that one too, and giving this one to my son or something. But my Raspberry Pi, I don't know what's going on. Okay. I installed the official Octoprint distribution, which is a pre-configured distro. You just burn it to SD.
Yeah, that just runs.
Well, it runs like crap. It runs horribly. I don't know what's going on. Most people I know running Octoprint insist you have to have it hardwired into your network. Well, it's in my garage. It's literally straight through this normal non-brick wall, maybe 8 feet, 10 feet. It's not far at all. And the built-in Wi-Fi chipset would connect, but then seemingly 3 to 5 minutes later, stop working, stop connecting. I don't know, just stop working. So I said, I'm smart enough. Let me plug up a Wi-Fi dongle. And I just have my little Wi-Fi thing that I use on all my Pi devices. No drivers needed. Get good throughput, good speeds.
Like a nub, no antenna?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And upstairs, two floors, I have them running on mini computers, and they work fine. Work great. Mm-hmm. Never have to reboot or anything. Seemingly after 24 hours or so, it loses connectivity. And if it's in the middle of a print, it will just seize up and stop printing. So I don't know if it's a failing Pi. I don't know if it has something to do with the Wi-Fi dongle. It might be a bad SD card or just a bad burn. I'm not sure. So what I saw was I could install Octoprint from DiaPi. So when I get a chance...
Oh, yeah? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So when I get a chance, I'm going to take the SD card out, nuke and pave it with DiaPi, physically connect it up to a monitor, do the install right here, and then see how that works. It might just be, just like everything else in my experience with these mini computers, these drivers then might be just better supported that I get with DiaPi. So I'm hoping that is the case, because every other day, at least when I come down here, my son wants to print something, I got to spend 15 to 20 minutes manually rebooting the Pi to get it to work. Because sometimes it will use the onboard Wi-Fi, and then sometimes it will use the Wi-Fi dongle, and I don't see any way in the OS to say disable this one, use that one.
Crap, what file is that? I think you can in the Wi-Fi config the Etsy networks. Wait,
I'm pretty sure there is a way. With two Google searches in 5 minutes, I couldn't find it, so I just stopped looking because I had to just get the print started for my son. So, and part of me is tempted to try to use a different board. Just because. And I tried to use the Cadis VM. Cadis VM was one of the ones that I was really uppity on. Comes in like a hipster case that's like a book.
That's cool.
It's already in a case when you get it. Already comes with a power cable. The power cable is USB 2.0 to USB-C. The power adapter is USB-C. So I said, I'm going to try to get this thing working on it. It's all open hardware. Unlike the Raspberry Pi, it's completely open hardware. And I said, I'll use this one instead. And I spent an hour trying to get a Linux installed on it. And all of their, because it comes with default with Android. And all of their instructions and all of their tools are Windows-only tools. I don't know why somebody touting completely open hardware running Linux would only put out tools on Linux. So I couldn't, Windows. Yeah. So I couldn't get the damn thing to work. And to upgrade the firmware, you have to use their Windows executable. So for right now, it's stuck running Android, and I'm not going to use that. So then just for giggles, I powered up my NanoPi Neo, which is the old school one, 512 megs of RAM. So I was just bored, so I just plugged that thing up. No more heat issues with the current distro. It was running great, fantastic. So I'm literally tempted to put a Wi-Fi dongle on that, put it out in the garage. The downside is I'm going to need either a USB powered hub in order to have the webcam and the printer connected at the same time.
Is there OTG on it or?
No, it's literally just micro USB for power, SD card, one USB 2.0 port, and one Ethernet port. So,
all right. So for the folks that aren't 3D printer capable or literate or savvy, Octoprint is basically a print server, and you can plug a webcam into it, and then you can see what you're printing. You could also stream it to your friends. You can open up the ports on your firewall for that. The other cool thing is you can actually do a stop motion animation of the print. So it does give you a whole bunch of neat benefits as opposed to having a unconnected device.
Yeah, and you can start prints, pause prints. You can upload prints to the Octa, to the hardware, or to the printer's SD card. You can like preheat your bed, preheat your nozzle, little things like that. Also, what I really like is there's two buttons for home, so you can very easily manipulate
the vertical home and then the X and Y home.
So you can very easily and very quickly move pieces on the device without having to go through the menu on the hardware. The menu on the hardware is not fun.
Yeah, it's workable, but actually the new Skynet Marlin software I have doesn't, maybe I just don't know where the menu items are, but it seems like I can't find some of those things.
Yeah.
The other cool thing is plugins. What did I got to look at what my plugins are, but I have Pushbullet on there, and what it does is it basically sends me like a text message and with an image when the print is complete. So that's kind of cool. I've got a couple of other plugins in there too. I'd have to look what they are.
Yeah, as soon as I get that mini computer up and running stably in a stable fashion, then I'm going to go back and look at that kind of stuff. Because I know there's more to it. I know there's more to it. But it's like I told my son, we're not going to put the cart before the horse. Let's first just get it stable, then we can start to tinker with it, kind of thing. But he is fascinated by the idea this little thing in this little box is connecting to our network, and on his phone upstairs he can go through it and he can monitor the print and he can see what's going on. Him and his cousin kept going back downstairs and back upstairs. One of them would be downstairs waving to the camera, the other one would be on the phone.
Okay, so I have Pushbullet and the firmware updater on it, so I can actually update the firmware on my printer through Octoprint. And here's the other cool thing. If you haven't been using Octoprint, it'll pop up in notification. It says update available. There are updates available, the following for Pushbullet, and I can just click update now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure for me to update my printer, it requires a Arduino to do.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, your printer. So I, for the people that have been following along at home, I have basically the Prusa i3 clone from GearBest. It's an ANET A8, and it's right around $160, and you spend about 8 hours assembling. Dor got the fantastically nice CR10 that, how long did it take you to put together?
Maybe a half an hour.
And half an hour, and was it already built, tested, then the top frame taken off and put packaged up? Is that?
It was mainly in three pieces. The computer box, the bed was already attached to the bottom, and the X gantry, the part that goes vertical, I just had to screw on with four screws, was basically it.
And I think you had a discount code, right?
Yeah. If one of the guys went on Facebook group for GearBest, I think it was, maybe GearBest, or it might have been the CR10 group, and just gave me a discount code where I literally got $20 off. And if I was smart, I would have picked the European plug.
Oh, right, because that was like $20 less.
Yeah, it was unbelievably less, but I foolishly didn't do that.
You snip the cord and put a $1 adapter on it.
Oh, not even that. The back of it is a normal printer socket. I mean, a computer socket.
What do you even call that? The 3-pin and...
Yeah. With the home base almost shaped plug. Yeah. So I could have just done that. I didn't. It was a half an hour.
$400 printer?
On a bad day, just over $400, $420. I've seen it the most. On a good day, as low as $350.
So, and I'm super handy. Built airplanes, built all sorts of engines, transmissions, turbochargers, differentials, that kind of stuff. It took me about 8 hours to assemble the printer. And depending on how you value your time, in a heartbeat, I would spend that money on that CR10.
Yeah. And and I'll say this. Got it put together. Then I put together two LAC tables, which is IKEA $7 special, 15 minutes a piece, even if you're slow. and then put it on the tables. Had a friend guide me through one of the beginner processes of getting the bed set up. And in under 2 complete hours, I'll say, because I was, just messing around stuff, I had what was a very reasonable, acceptable quality of print coming off.
That's freaking good. I mean, that's like way out there as far as when you compare it to what I've been through.
Yeah.
And also the other big thing, like I think my printer is like 220 by 220 by 240 millimeters. Your print volume is what?
300 by 300 by 400.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Now, maybe we're all just megalomaniacs to one degree or another or for different things. The Anet is big, which it's a clone of the Prusa, but it's bigger. I think the Prusa is like a 200 cubed size, 200 millimeters cubed. And I don't know what I've printed that was the maximum, you know, more than what you would have been able to print with the next smaller printer. But even though I haven't printed something to the full volume, you know, when you say, you know, 300 by 300 by 400, I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to get one. Don't know why.
Well, it's like wanting to own a Ferrari. It's not like you're going to go 280 miles an hour, but
who are you talking about?
Well, yeah, somebody.
Do you know how fast my car goes?
Fast.
146 miles an hour. You know how I know?
Well, my motorcycle went that fast.
Yeah, because there's a speed limiter on it, and it chops the throttle.
Gotcha. I wanted to bring up one article, partially because I'm unbelievably biased. I personally believe it was a very well-written article. Line 487 on the notes. It's by a guy I consider a friend, Seth. And it's about... And when I first read it, I was almost insulted by the article name. But then I started to read it. Then I saw who it was from, and it made a lot of sense. It's by... Seth Kelton. Sorry, my Google Drive doesn't want to reconnect. And it's comparing what makes no sense to me in the beginning, a pocket chip to a Raspberry Pi. Now, I will say the pocket chip is one of the many computing devices that I have not touched in months. And he kind of goes into what I think is actually a pretty good comparison, even though it's apples and oranges, literally doing it. But he did bring up some very good points about both. The biggest pain with that pocket chip device is the quality of the keyboard. You cannot...
Yeah, that looks horrific.
Yeah, you cannot type anything fast, and it's almost like bubble wrap when you're pushing down the keys.
And the letters are so darn small, I don't think I'd be able to read them.
You literally would have to like memorize them to become quick on it. But there is definite advantages to this. One, it's in your pocket, a very big pocket, a literal full-fledged computer that you can program, then pull out of the back and put as a like IoT type computer kind of thing. So you don't have to bring it back to your computer. You don't have to connect it over the network. You don't have to do all that kind of stuff. Two, it has a touch screen on it, which to be honest, opens up the possibilities of what you can do on it a lot. On the very top of the pocket chip, it has all of the pinouts right there in front of you.
And it looks like they're labeled too, right?
Oh, they're very labeled. And that was the one thing I really appreciated about the chip. Everywhere the GPIO pins are labeled, even on the just the device itself, instead of having just the pin stick up, they have the black box with all the holes in it. And on the outside and inside, it tells you what all the pins are. It's that kind of nicety, which, to be honest, I really like. The other thing that I don't even think he brings up in his comparison is, and I'll say it again, even though I once in a while get hate when I say this, the Raspberry Pi is not completely open. The GPU in the Raspberry Pi is technically closed-sourced. They opened up all the standards for it, and you can program on it, but it's still property. It is still intellectual property of... the Wi-Fi chipset manufacturer that I can't stand.
Is it Realtek?
I don't believe it's Realtek. One of them, whatever. Granted, it's not closed. It's not completely closed source, but the chip is literally completely open, and every one of its drivers are in the default Debian repo. So you can't get more open than that. Debian is the pure of the pure, and it just works. And that kind of flexibility means if you install Debian on your laptop or desktop and you don't go in and add repos and you don't download source files and you don't compile from source, anything you can do on that laptop or desktop, technically you can do on the chip.
Correct. Yeah.
Now, the only failing about the chip is the processor is a single core. It's not a fast single core. You don't get massive amounts of RAM, so nothing on the chip is snappy. But it is, but in my experience, it's really solid. I was very happy with it. What I'm going to do now, just because Metroid is a game that's coming back out. They just made an announcement for it for the Switch, and I accidentally watched a video about Super Metroid, which is on the SNES, which was maybe in the top 3 or 5 best games of absolute all time. So what I'm tempted to do is to install base Debian on my chip, put a Super Nintendo emulator on it, connect it to a TV because I have the hat for it, and just get some old school gaming on. There will be a link to this article in the notes. And honestly, I encourage people read it. If you want to send Seth feedback, he has contact information right there. If you want to send us feedback on it, don't forget, all you do is just send an email to minipcshow@podnuts.com, or just go podnuts and then click on contact.
So, I don't know if you listen to the Tilts episode. I think you listen every Tilts episode the next morning. But Dan Fry built a meme box that he uploaded the images in the IRC, and it looks fantastic.
Well, I know with MAME, there's a lot of skins you can do, and they have gotten a hell of a lot better in the last even like year, two years. I was shocked.
He's running on a Pi. I forget which Pi. Oh, and I'm sorry. I'm kind of going to reach back to Octoprint. I originally was running Octoprint on a Raspberry Pi 3 because I thought the Raspberry Pi 0 wasn't powerful enough to do it. It is. And I just slid the card out and slid it into the Pi Zero because, that's another thing. I have the filament sensor. So basically it's a micro switch in something I printed, and it'll sense when the filament is out. And that's another plugin I have in Octoprint is for filament. So I had to solder the header, the 40-pin header, onto the Pi Zero, and I do have it running both off Wi-Fi and over power, or Ethernet over power. Let me say that correct. And my house is steel studs, so the penetration of Wi-Fi is like one wall. So going from my office through two walls into the garage, just is kind of iffy at best.
Right. And the Pi Zero, it's one of those things when it's officially supported, which I believe did just happen.
Pi Zero W.
Yeah, then I would expect, it to run a little bit smoother, run a little bit better than before. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, the W wasn't supported by Octoprint. It now is. So if you have a Pi Zero W, that's like, what, $10?
Yeah.
So that if you want to do Octoprint, Pi Zero W is the way to go.
Very cool, very cool. One of the other things that I think we actually talked about in a previous show, but I wanted to just talk about just a touch more, because this is the one that I might pull the trigger on to put on my printer. That is the NanoPi Neo Plus 2 Line 487. I keep looking at all these ones, and really, I don't want to say I'm cheap, but I have to be frugal just because. It is a $25 mini computer, which I'm afraid to look at the shipping, but I'm going to look at the shipping here in a little bit. That is literally half the size of the Raspberry Pi, and yet is very competitive with the hardware specs of the Raspberry Pi.
Does it have Ethernet and 2 USB?
It has only 1 gig of RAM, just like the Pi. Gigabit NIC, 8 gig,
nice.
8 gig eMMC onboard.
You're
built.
Killing me.
Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and it looks like 2 USB 2.0 ports. Technically, I'm going to say this. In every way that at least I'm looking at it, should be at least equal or more powerful than it. The disadvantage is going to be, again, the Raspberry Pi graphics processor is going to be better performing. Broadcom. It's Broadcom. That's who it is. It's going to be better, out of the box. But I'm not going to use this for graphical things. Mm-hmm. So I almost don't really care about that.
Wow, that's a great price. So here's the cool thing about that. And when you talk about eMMC on board, is you really need to take another $10 off the price. Because whatever you're the least you're going to spend is going to be 10 bucks, like on a 16 gig card or so in that area. So realistically, your cost of ownership, because you're going to have at least a $10 card into the $30 Raspberry Pi. Raspberry Pi is really $40, and that Nano Pi Neo you said is 25, right?
Yeah.
And really, it's 15 when you're done.
Right. Yeah. And one of the other things I like is you can get a Wi-Fi antenna for it as well, which has to increase the performance. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to think antenna versus no antenna. Antenna should get better. Now, $25 out of the box, you get the board itself and the physical antenna.
Oh, that's good. Now, if that had USB 3.0 on it, I'd be all sorts of in love with it.
Well, I'll say you can't have everything, but there is, I think, thank thought, another new Nano Pi board that did have USB 3, but I want to say it was closer to $30-$35. And then, of course, you have the new ROC 64 board, which is the Pine ROC board with all that. But I do believe
up to 4 gigs, right?
Yeah, but I don't believe it might have been announced, but I don't think you can buy it yet. But yeah, so I might buy this one just because of that. And I honestly, friendly elect, I feel very good about them as a company. When I get their boards, I like the fact that there's a broad range of operating systems I can do. Literally, right. Like I want to say four.
And I hate to throw anybody under the bus because I do have a bit of love for the Orange Pi stuff because I guess it's cheap. But after the shipping, it really isn't that cheap. But the Orange Pi seems to be the worst as far as OSs. Do you concur?
They seem to be the least polished. Now, it wouldn't shock me if you would buy the device, leave it in the box for 4 months, and then download the image. It might be a better experience because hopefully they're updating it. But I know when we got ours, I was, I don't want to say disappointed because everything worked. But I was shocked at how well it worked for being as hot as it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Orange Pis always run hot. And I had that. You sent me the Banana Pi M3. And if I put the wrong OS on it, it ran hot.
Right. Yeah. So I might be doing that. I don't know. I do not want to jump the gun. I don't want to overspeak, but I might be doing something like that.
A Pi Zero W for Octoprint or that would be real good. I hate using. See, I also want to do the right sizing of the device for what I'm doing. So I have my PiAware is running, which it's been ungodly. Not like it's been ungodly hot here, but it's been consistently hot. And I 3D printed a case with a fan for my Raspberry Pi because it's in my steel shed. Which is it Cool Hand Luke or Slow Hand Luke? I always get that wrong.
Cool Hand, I believe.
It's Cool Hand Luke. I always think about him in the hot box because, it's just ungodly hot in there. And I have printed a case with a fan on it. And the thing is just running. I mean, maybe I'm diminishing its life. Maybe it's going to croak tomorrow. I don't know. But I have a Raspberry Pi doing it. And that's Pi 2. And that's like the minimum device to run PiAware. And I can run PiAware on the Orange Pi Zero, and I have. But again, after the shipping in the 4 weeks or 6 weeks, however long it takes to get here, it really isn't that much of a bargain. It's a neat enough device, but it's not that much of a bargain. So, and that's why I liked swapping out the Pi 3 on my Octoprint for a Pi Zero, because now I have a Pi 3 to do something with if I want a more powerful device to do something.
Right. The next link is really, I'm bringing it up because it's a question. Confuses the hell out of me. Line 497 in the notes. And I'm going to read this slowly, okay? This is on cnxsoftware.com. Honestly, one of the sites that I really, really like. I find pretty good stuff on it pretty consistently. But the title of the article is Microsoft Releases Raspberry Pi 3 Web Simulator Working with Azure IoT Cloud. Okay, Microsoft released a Raspberry Pi 3 Web Simulator working with Azure IoT Cloud. What? Why?
Hmm.
Why on earth do you think they would do this? Because I've only came up with one thing I can say, but I want to hear if you can think of anything, because I had to think about this for a while. It confused the crap out of me.
All right, so the way I look at it is, hey, it's a virtualized Raspberry Pi, and I can do stuff in the cloud that I can't do if I don't have the hardware available myself. That'd be the one thing. The other thing is, as you were talking, I'm thinking about Minecraft. Kind of like, gee, why would Microsoft want Minecraft?
Well, money.
Well, is it a moneymaker, or is it really?
No doubt. It sells. It sells like crazy. People buy it on like 3-4 platforms.
Okay, so I wasn't real sure if it was a moneymaker or if it was a great thing for branding, for younger people to get a good warm and fuzzy about Microsoft. Because when you think about like Microsoft versus Apple, Apple was going under for a while. Microsoft actually gave them, was it $10 million, $100
million?
Something, they infused them with some money.
Yeah,
you know, it was kind of like Darth Vader coming out of the background. There was some Apple convention and Bill Gates came out. It's like, hey, we got a new benefactor. So everybody loves Apple. You know, you get these Apple fanboys. Nobody's waiting 3 weeks in advance outside a Microsoft store for a new OS release or an Xbox, or maybe they are. But everybody loves Apple. They could care less if they make the laptops or iPads or iPhones out of baby kittens. It wouldn't matter. They'd still love it. As far as, I'm going to butcher the word, philanthropy, however you want to say it. Apple doesn't donate anything to anybody anywhere anymore. I think they used to at one time. So they're living on the old reputation of like, oh yeah, Apple's such a great company. Whereas Microsoft, if you get the kids, if you get the next generation hooked on you and loving you, like if everybody's using Windows 10 and think about, oh yeah, the Minecraft people. Oh, yeah, I had so much good times. You remember that? That's what I was thinking. And if it's Raspberry Pi, the other thing is they're using Minecraft as a teaching tool for coding. And if that, so PR wise and maybe teaching coding, and would be my thought of why they would be doing it.
Yeah, I can only think of one half reason and then one real reason. One, it might be quicker to program on this than programming on real physical hardware, just because Raspberry Pi is limited to its processor and its RAM and stuff. Technically on this, you could have faster RAM and faster processors while still emulating the base hardware, is my logic.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's not reason enough. So my other reason I can only think of is, so what if I want to have an IoT service that I own in my house, but then I can have cloud failover? And I don't know if that's even plausible, because my logic is tunneling a sensor GPIO port from the cloud through to my house. While I'm sure is plausible and I'm sure is doable, I'm also sure is not efficient and I can't believe would work good. And the only reason I say that is because old thin client company that I can never remember, that was popular there for years. Yeah, Wyze. One of the leading execs left like 9 years ago now, started up a new company called Pano. And one of his breakthroughs was he virtualized the buses to where the OS was on the VM and the buses were the transport layer over the Ethernet cable, and the base hardware could be even less because all it was the endpoint. Thus, you could get really good like video speed through the devices, and no dropped frame, 60 frames a second, unbelievable speed out of a device that was really small, not much to it, and not really expensive for business uses. But they didn't have the name, and then I do believe Wyze bought them back up. So I know there's possibilities of virtualizing other things over a network, but this, and it could be the warm feels. It could just be they want their name thrown out when people say Raspberry Pi. I don't know, but I'll say if you're a Microsoft Azure Internet of Things guy or you know somebody that is, I would love for them to tell me a use case for using this, because I'm going to literally guess it's for nothing more than virtual programming kind of thing. I don't know. I thought it was interesting enough to at least talk about, and I was hoping we could come up with a better answer.
What I find interesting is it's not only the Pi. They're virtualizing from the screen here. They're showing a breadboard, and they're showing an LED, and I don't know if it's a sensor board.
Yeah, and they can even virtualize some of the sensors themselves, like virtual sensors.
There's two words that I kind of hate. Well, there's three, but I'm not going to go into the third one.
Taxes?
IoT. It's always been things on the internet. And maybe because I'm always aggravated by that term. I'm like, IoT? I'm like, really?
Yeah. It is just another endpoint.
Yeah. Everybody's like, ooh, IoT. And that kind of annoys me. The other thing is the term cloud. I'm like, And what's cloud mean to you? Can you give me a definition of that thing called a cloud?
To me, the word cloud is what you use when you want to convey a message to people that don't understand computers.
Right, right.
And that's it.
It's in the cloud. Yeah. Microsoft ran that, like, when you're stuck at the airport and your movies are on your home PC, you go to the cloud. I'm like, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there any other links in the notes that caught your attention?
Well, you dropped in the link for the lowrider.
Yeah.
The line 496. So somebody basically did they chop like the end where the ports are? So the Cat5, the double stack USB 2.0 ports, and they kind of put them off on the end and 3D printed a case. And are you going to chop and channel your Raspberry Pi 3 like that?
Honestly, I'll say this. The reason I'm okay with this is the USB ports are 2.0. The NIC is 10/100. Mm-hmm. So you would have to then connect everything through a OTG cable if you want any kind of ports onto it. I don't really use like the camera plug, and I don't use any of those ribbon cables. So I really do like the idea of this. It gives your Raspberry Pi much less space that it needs. And you can basically put it in a smaller form factor, and it actually looks to me very like credit card friendly size shape. I would slightly worry about heat issues, you know, but I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Well, if you stacked four or five on top of each other without an air gap, yeah, I'd worry about heat.
Well, even if you do some hard processing, I could be a little bit, you know, nervous about the speeds of it. So the only way you're going to get Ethernet through this thing, if that is a requirement, is a OTG cable and then have the drivers already built in to the OS. Honestly, if I had, and I believe I'm getting soldering equipment here shortly, I'm almost tempted to buy a Pi and try this just to try it, just to see it, just to do it, just to see, is it then easier to manage, easier to carry around, become a more portable type solution?
I mean, if that's your goal, if portability is your goal, yeah, go for it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You asked me about Pi stuff. I don't know if I talked about this on the Makers or not, but here is, do you recognize that board? Can you identify that board?
Yeah, that's a Joe Heck special. That's a Banana Pi M3.
So it's the Banana Pi M3. And on Thingiverse, somebody had something like this, and I stretched it in two dimensions and took a nibble off the corner. And what this originally was designed to do is hold a Raspberry Pi, so it'll hold the Raspberry Pi 2 or 3. And then this holds the Banana Pi M3, and I stretched them so they're the same length now. And my idea is I'm going to put them in a rack where there's a slot, and there's a little notch here in a detent. So it's going to snap into a rack in my data center in a drawer and organize them. So this is going to be the variable that, you know, handles how wide or tall or whatever something is. It'll be the universal adapter that fits into the slot.
Right. Very nice.
Because originally I was zippy tying them on the corrugated plastic board, and that even getting the card out, if the card was on the bottom, was a pain in the butt. Then I'm like, oh, standoffs. Then, you know what? I'm rewiring stuff in that drawer so fast, it really needs to be tool-free, snap in, snap out.
Right. The link to that Raspberry Pi Slim case is by Node N-O-D-E on YouTube. I'll have a link to the video in the notes. That case you have, Richard, the thing I like about it is it's open. Part of my, I don't want to say concerns, worries, anxiety, because I have anxiety over everything, is closing a mini computer in a case without good, really good ventilation. And what you have is basically, it's completely open. So the case is not a case. The case is nothing more than a holder of the device.
Yeah, so, it just snaps on the corners, basically.
Yeah, so I definitely like the idea of that. That to me is definitely friendly.
I'll have that in front of the 100-millimeter fan, and input air should be equal to the output air, so you want that stepped off the back, so you don't want it like on a flat thing. You want it on something where the air can pass through.
Yeah, and there was one more link that I do not see making it into the notes that I saw. I thought I bookmarked. So I'm going to, while I talk, open up plus.google.com. Then I'm going to click profile on the side, because I'm pretty sure I did tweet it out. You run Plex on a lot of things, and I did share it to the Google Plus community, but I forgot to add it to the notes, so I'm going to put it right here in the Google Hangout for you. I never heard of this before. How to install OpenPHT on Odroid C2 as the example. And it says say goodbye to transcoding. Okay.
Oh.
One of the benefits, I'm going to start that way. I'm going to spin it like a politician. One of the great things about Plex is you can run your server on almost any hardware, and you can run the client on almost any hardware. Thus, if certain hardware only supports certain formats of video, then your Plex server will on the fly dynamically retranscode the video into a more friendly format for the actual client, so you see better results. Well, when you have your Plex server running on less hardware, like a mini computer, you actually don't want it to transcode video, because it will probably inhibit performance and put a lot of stress on your mini computer. I've never even heard of OpenPHT before I saw this note, actual link, and it says OpenPHT is a community-driven fork of Plex Home Theater, giving you the ability to connect to Plex Media Server and play files from it. It offers good compatibility for media formats, subtitles, lowering the number of transcodes when you are playing media files. Besides improved media compatibility, if you install OpenPHT on your Odroid C2, you get access to a few skins reminiscent of Kodi or something like that. So while stuff like the Odroid C2 does not have as good of a graphic processor on it as the Raspberry Pi 3, this might be an alternate way to see similar or maybe even better results off of your Plex without having to have a Raspberry Pi in its place. I have an Odroid C2 upstairs. I can tell you, on my Plex, I was getting underwhelming performance is what I'm going to say. And then when I went into Kodi and I said, add a device, SMB Samba Connect to my server, browse the folder, click play, I was seeing better results.
Oh boy.
So
that's never good.
Yeah, so I'm really tempted to give this an install, see if it works. But I'll say right now, the bad thing is my Odroid C2 is running an Android already configured the way the family likes it. And I'm going to have to basically download new OS and I believe blast the OS. The good thing is, of course, it's an SD card. I can flippity flop anytime I want. Mm-hmm. Family doesn't need to know. I can do it when they're in bed. So I think I'm going to try this out. Give it a shot, just to see if I get better performance, because that would be a nice thing.
And you know, we haven't done the show in a while, and so what do you do for July 4th?
Nothing. I am morally and ethically, as far as I'm concerned, utterly against people doing fireworks and stuff in their neighborhood just because of veterans. I think it's a really bad
PTSD.
Yeah, I think it's a really bad insult to do it to them. What we did was two or three days before the July 4th, because it fell on a Tuesday, we went over to my mother-in-law's house. I gave my kids some sparklers and told them to have fun.
So what we did over here at the Hughes Compound Southern Command is, see, I hate doing geeky things with my wife around because she'll inject commentary. So she was out doing something. I forgot what it was. But my daughter and I were hanging out by the pool. I grabbed a TV that we weren't using out of the closet, and this could have been a Pi device. It wasn't. I grabbed the Roku version 1.0, plugged it in, and, you know, HDMI cable in. So it's just grabbed a power strip, the Roku, the TV, and all of a sudden we're watching Plex, Netflix, etc. out by the pool.
Very cool.
I forgot you could do that, and it's like, oh, wow, that's cool. You know, you could... Because when you think about TV, you think about the cable and the connection. But if you have a mini computer, mini PC of some sort of device, whether it's, you know, a Roku Fire Stick or, you know, Odroid or something, you can just plug that in and have that as the source.
Right. Yeah. And like with those devices, I believe on the, at least Roku, during the Christmas holiday, you could do a Yule log. I'd be shocked if they didn't have some kind of fireworks. I think they did last year, now that I remember that, because my kids wanted to stay up. We knew they wouldn't be able to stay up. And I think, thank thought, on Roku, they had a fireworks thing. You could play it, and they would do a little intro. No, that was New Year's Eve. And then they would do the countdown and say, Happy New Year for the kids and stuff. And, you know, so they didn't have to be up late. But I think they should have something for July as well. I'm not against celebrating it. In fact, I have no problem going over somebody's house when they're doing the barbecuing and they're supplying the beer. I think it's a great time. So yeah. Yeah. Were there any other things in the notes that got your attention?
Let me just see, because I dropped in. I'm not going to talk about that right now. We mentioned that rock one. Is that the one I dropped in? I'm a big fan of the x86 mini PCs, and there's an AMD version. It says it's $89, so line 498.
Mm.
So this looks way the heck cool. I don't think it has SATA. That's the only shortcoming I see on it.
Mm. Okay, well, it's Sapphire with a great name. Sapphire BP-LX210KL board. Powered by AMD G-Series LX dual-core processor. It looks very... Well, it's not mini. It's pretty mini, and it looks ultra-compact, I'll say.
It's nook-sized.
Yeah.
All right, so here's what I see the benefits of this are. And actually, I'm running my probably nearly 10-year-old, formerly Hackintosh, as an ESXi host, and it only has 8 gigs of RAM. So this will go up to 16 gigs of RAM, two DDR3 chips. And, oh, it does say storage 1M SATA. Okay,
yeah.
So it does have the M SATA, which is cool.
Yeah.
So for an AMD, it's only dual core, not a quad core, but that's still decent enough. I mean, heck, this...
But it has dual HDMI.
It does have dual HDMI.
I was waiting for you to say that part. I thought that was going to get you excited. It has a dual-core processor. I don't see speeds on it, but it says it supports DirectX 11, OpenGL 4.2, stuff like that. Base, it looks like two DDR3
right.
DIMMs. DIMM slots for up to 16 giggity gigs of non-ECC RAM, non-ECC, non-error correction. Technically means it'll be a touch slower, but it's 16 gigs. You'll be fine. mSATA. mSATA is technically SSD, but it's not, but it is. It's like a smaller form factor, but it's essentially the speeds and everything of an SSD, so I like that as well. The dual HDMI, that to me makes it very possible to dual HDMI. And it says outputs with support for two simultaneous independent displays. Gigabit NIC with a Realtek PCIe chip, which you should get good, really good speeds off of that. USB 2 3.0 ports, and it looks like two USB 2.0 ports. One mini PCIe slot. Wow. Battery dimensions 100 millimeters by 100 millimeters. So you could print a case for that thing. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's Pam jacked with everything I want.
Yeah, and I'll say the heat sink on it compared to the rest of the unit is upboard ratio. Like, it is gigantic, mm-hmm. which I'm okay with. I'm okay with. I don't.
And it's got the heat pipes as opposed to just a hunk of aluminum.
Right. And there's no visible fan, which means it should run at least quiet. The only thing I don't see, which I wish they would show, is the power brick. How big is that power brick?
Well, does it talk about the wattage?
I'm sure it does. It says 19 volts,
okay,
3.42 amps.
So most laptop power bricks are 19 volts.
Gotcha.
I have no idea why it's 19 volts. I don't know if that's, you know, NiCad cells in, you know, so much of a form factor right up to that voltage. But yeah, most laptops power supplies are 19 volts.
Yeah, and I've never heard of this. There's looks like two models, the 25-40G and the 2640G. The 25-40G comes with motherboard, heatsink, driver DVD, which you're going to need, quick installation guide, Mentor Linux postcard ? And Mentor Linux documentation. I've never heard of Mentor Linux. I don't care what it's called as long as I can use it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? There's no doubt it's nothing crazy. It's just a custom spin, I'm sure, of something.
Okay, so $89. If I load it up to 16 gigs of RAM, how much is 16 gigs of DDR3 going to cost me?
Oh, it can't be much. At the most, $40, I'll say.
So we're talking for the price of what, and I don't know what the shipping delivery cost and where this is coming from, but for the price of the original upboard, I'm getting something really kick-ass.
Yeah.
And has two HDMI ports, which I'm sure I've got an HDMI to, you know, DVI cable kicking around. And I could run two monitors off it.
And it has two USB 3.0 ports, like, on the board itself.
That's just mad love right there. I think I need two of those.
Well, this is the kind of thing I could literally see printing a little handy dandy case for it, with a, dare I say, almost a little handle on the side to where you can just, you know, carry it around. Wow.
Well, I'm not ready to talk about a project that I'm concocting, but an x86 board is a component of the project. A, you know, super small x86 board. It might be an up board.
Well, and no matter how much love I give to ARM processors, in all reality, x86-based boards or 64-bit boards, it's where it's at. That's where you get the easiest transition from your laptop desktop to something else, period.
Yeah, and that's really, if ARM boards were the original thing, I'd be all over ARM boards. I'd have mad love for ARM boards. But x86 is where everything, the compatibility nexus meets.
Yeah.
And
I mean, stuff like flash dying helps ARM out a lot. It really does. But we haven't had that growth spurt of processor speed, nanometer size, efficiency come through yet to where, you know, they really are truly competitive. It's really nice. I mean, a sub-$100 x86 board with all those features on it is really desirable.
Buy me now?
I don't think it's actually out yet. That's one of the, that's the only failing I'm going to say. And I don't see a date or a saying, you know, second quarter, third quarter kind of thing. All it says is the...
I mean, they got a price on it.
Yeah. So you should not expect amazing performance, but the price overall still makes it interesting for it. Yeah, there's no word here, at least, on a date.
Sapphire.com.
Here you go. This is all the information. They'll provide a overview of the board in the webinar on July 19th. So we'll certainly know more at that time.
There's an order now button on their website.
Oh, there you go.
Contact information, verify code, send by order. Huh. It's what I clicked. It says my order is an LX210 4x4.
Okay. I don't think I would click, you know, complete buy or complete purchase.
Yeah, this isn't... Oh, wait, this is the LX210KL.
Maybe it's 4 inches by 4 inches? No, it can't be. No. 100 is definitely bigger than 4 inches. 100 millimeters, if I'm correct, which I'm American, I could be very wrong.
Where's my caliper?
I don't know. Well, okay, in the description, it says in a 4x4 form factor, so that is it. Yeah, wow. And they have two. They have the G series and the R series of them. Oh, yeah, they have a whole bunch of them. Yeah. Yeah, I got to stop clicking. I'm guessing that's about it, Rich. Where can people catch up with you?
Oh, hey, thanks for asking. AlwaysFlyingRich.com is kind of my social media hub. And if you want to see what I've been up to, videos I've been doing. And, you know, Dory, you're going to applaud this if you haven't already. I pulled the plug on my YouTube monetization. I don't make any money on YouTube, so why should I make you watch ads?
Okay, bad news. I don't think that completely does what you think it does.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't.
I'm pretty sure they show ads on your videos, just not as much and not as pushy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe anybody should click monetize videos on YouTube, because when you do, you hand over all the power over to YouTube. If you want to make money doing videos, put videos on YouTube as teasers to videos on your site. Buck up, pay for hosting, buck up, pay for storage, buck up, pay for a interface on those videos that make it appealing. Use YouTube as a tool, as a marketing tool. Don't use it as everything, is what I try to tell people. And of course, I'm not right, because nobody seems to do that. Okay, I want to thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for downloading. I will remind people, please, every couple weeks, every couple months, go to podnos.com. Check out the shows. We have all kinds of shows from, of course, many PC shows, but we also have Podnuts Pro, where we have true, quantified professionals in the business talking about how they admin large domains, how they handle, you know, $200,000 rollouts of hardware, you know, how they handle their Fluke device, which is like, you know, the Porsche of networking tools. We have shows about, you know, computer repair, Podnuts and Podnuts Daily, and amongst another host of kinds of shows. Go there, check it out. We are going to add some more deals to the deals page. And if you'd like to support us, there are multiple ways to do it there. Support those who support you, or else we're going to have to go get sponsors. Period. With that, we will talk to everyone again real soon.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.